welcome to Geek Space 9, the Tusken Shed podcast where we discover and or rediscover the classic Star Trek series, Deep Space 9. With me today, as always, is Sarah.
Hi, everyone.
And Peter.
What's up, guys?
And today we are talking about Season 1, Episode 15 and 16, which is Progress and If Wishes Were Horses. So first up is Progress. In this episode, we get a dual storyline, like we've gotten a few times. The main story, the A story, is that Kira is told to go basically shuttle off a farmer who's on a moon that they're going to be tapping for a valuable resource, but the tapping of said moon will cause horrible noxious gases that will kill everyone on the planet. Everyone evacuates but this one farmer. Kira goes up there to meet this guy named of Mullabok. They sort of, she goes there initially to think just to get him off the land immediately, but ends up staying there several days, maybe in a week or so, as she learns to really respect this man who escaped the Cardassians and built this place on their own, and they kind of are both fighters who've had to scrounge out everything they've ever earned, so she appreciates and kind of loves this guy, but eventually she realizes she has to do her duty, and she sort of darkly burns down his village and shuttles him off the island in a very interesting sort of turn of her side picking, which is very interesting. And the more fun storyline in the B-plot, we get sort of a Zelda Ocarina of Time trading game with Jake and Nog. Nog discovers that his dumb father, Rom, accidentally bought too much Yamek sauce, a disgusting sauce that only Cardassians like. I mean, no more Cardassians around, it's useless. So Nog trades that for a bunch of self-sealing stem bolts, which I say
very important that they're self-sealing.
They're self-sealing.
Yeah.
You can't build houses without bolts, as Nog says later. And then they sell that for a bunch of land on Bajor, and then sell that for what they want initially, which is 5 pieces of gold-pressed latinum to Quark. And so kind of humorously, they end up selling Quark what he wanted to get rid of for free. So, very clever, very fun little part, as well as a very interesting dark thing. So I guess we'll start there. Was it, like, tonally, do you feel it was all right?
I think so. I think that it provided, or the Nog and Jake storyline provided much-needed comic relief for the significantly darker Kira storyline.
Yeah,
because, I mean, obviously we wanted the Kira storyline to turn out well, and even at the end, even though Mullabok, you know, does end up alive and everything, it's still, you know, she burns down his home so that she can take him to a place he hasn't been to in 40 years. And I don't know, it was kind of weird that they ended on that note, I thought. Deep Space Nine has been doing a lot of abrupt endings in their show, and it literally just ended with, I'm going to burn down your house and take you away from everything you know. Bye.
Right. There was another episode, I'm trying to remember what it was, I think it was Past Prologue, right, ended as well with a Kira sort of dark Kira moment where the person basically calls her a traitor or something like that, I believe is the last line.
We mentioned that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was that thinking episode of that episode.
Well, yeah, we mentioned that a similar way of ending very abruptly and on a Kira moment as well. And I feel like this season's been a lot about Kira's transition from this Bajoran resistance fighter to being the man, essentially being a person who has to make these hard, painful decisions that she can't have everything she wants. You can't be a resistance fighter and build a better Bajoran through bureaucracy and peace and compromise. You know, that you have to sometimes burn down someone's house, you know, to get them to move.
In that sense, I think it certainly speaks to the season as a whole. Like not just Kira, but the space station itself. The space station itself and the Bajoran people switching from fighting against the Cardassians and wanting them to leave to now being free and working alongside the Federation, like Akira Kira has had several moments, like again, past prologue, like we said, in this episode, progress, in the episode when they had to leave, when they had to leave Opaka on that moon, yeah. She herself, but then I feel the Bajorans as a whole have had to have like this ongoing gradual realization that things are changing, that sometimes, you know, like you said, it can't be the way it was, and tough decisions have to be made, and sometimes you have to make that abrupt switch in your head and realize this is where I am now, and I'm sorry, but that's just it. Like these are the cards that we've been dealt, and I can't change that.
No, I definitely agree with that. There is something very tragic about that, and this is sort of, I feel like, an even better episode than the Kaya Paka one, which kind of just briefly mentioned her warlikeness and letting that pain go. This is sort of her, I think, more interestingly, that Bajoran sense of 50 years, I think, of occupation of
yeah, I think it was 50.
Striving beyond all measure, and as he says, like, this is my life, this is my home, I don't exist beyond this point, you know what I mean? You're never going to convince me to leave here. It's not a place, it's more than that, it's my entire identity. Everything here is built because, you know, he literally plowed the earth with his hands,
right? Yeah, as he told her,
and whether that's tall tales or not, it's the idea of complete enraptured into a place, you know what I mean? And you can't, yeah, like, just take that away from people.
Really,
and
you know, really making something from nothing. Yeah, and with you saying that, and then us talking about how abrupt the ending was, I feel that the reason Kira did this, that she did that, is because of how much she connected with Mullabok over the course of this episode, and her progression to moving past the Cardassian occupation. She connected with him. She connected with Mullabok that much, and she knew exactly where he was coming from. So she was able to more personally than any of the main crew relate to his argument. But she also realized that in order to move on, you kind of have to figuratively and quite literally just burn shit to the ground and move past it.
Right. I mean, it's a very challenging, interesting scene because of that reason. He doesn't fight back. You know, he's not screaming at her. He kind of understands what she's doing, but he just has to look in awe of what she's become. And I really like the way they play that a lot. The actor who plays it is Brian Keith, who's actually nostalgically the dad from the original Parent Trap movie, and so he has this sort of warm fatherly figure that he's been playing for 40-50 years, you know, and he does a great job in this episode conveying this idea of a person who would keep you there, you know what I mean? We can all see ourselves meeting this guy and finding him annoying at first and stubborn and pigheadish, but just deeply human, well, deeply Bajoran, a person who has a lot of history and a lot of wealth and a lot of knowledge of spirit that you just want to be around, and it breaks your heart that you have to do something so horrible to him.
Yeah, there was something very charming about Mullabok that even though you were like, please just go with Kira, like there was still that kind of like that want to like just kind of hear him talk.
Definitely. And I actually did quite enjoy the Nog and Jake storyline as well. I guess maybe because I do like trading stories. I find those very fascinating, people who can turn things from one thing to another. There's famously a story of a guy who turned like a pen, I think, into a house. He sort of like, and he went through all these trading things, and I find that skill very interesting. So it was just sort of funny to me, the way that they built everything, and I liked the little moment where they have O'Brien in, they're like, the stem bolts, right? And he's like, I don't know what the fuck they are. And they're like, oh, we thought you might. And then being clever, like, oh, let's sell it back to the guy. And like, I like, the twist that Cork ends up paying for the thing he didn't even want in the first place, essentially. Like, the Yamek sauce that he didn't even want ended up costing him down the line for various reasons. I was like, that's very clever.
And there was a very nice moment there at the end in their last scene where, you know, Nog makes him the offer and you can just see the look on his face. He's like, not sure if I should be annoyed or impressed.
I think he was more impressed. Looking back at the episode, the Negus with how impressed he was with Rom for almost getting away with like his plot to kill him. I feel that he had the same thought about Nog. It's like you went to all this trouble and you are actually like following through and getting shit done. Like I think he was very impressed by that because it's very Ferengi.
Mm-hmm.
No, totally, and you could tell he was impressed that he's in this position now. By the way, I looked up gold press latinum, which they keep mentioning it, so I was curious about it.
Yeah, it's like every other episode.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, what it is latinum is a liquid metal that cannot be replicated, which is why it is valuable.
Oh.
It's pressed into gold because gold can be replicated. So in the future, gold is worthless because you can just make gold.
Nice.
So it is pressed into latinum. But you can also have liquid latinum, which is like a ton of latinum and like super expensive. But like small amounts of latinum are pressed into gold bars. That's why I say gold pressed latinum.
And also it being a solid would make it significantly more portable.
Exactly.
Makes sense for a currency.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's why I was curious why they keep mentioning it. I was like, that's a smart idea and that obviously currency is based on things that are valuable. You post value onto currency, and the idea that you put it onto a thing that cannot be replicated makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
Which is another interesting point, because I remember in one of the films, I don't even remember if it was Captain Kirk or Captain Picard who said it, but they mentioned that the Federation, or just Earth in general in the 24th century, has moved on from something, you know, from things like money, and they do everything, you know, sort of for the good of the planet or for the good of intelligent life or whatever it is. But really, people are still dealing not even just with trade, but with currency. And I wonder, I don't know, what the connection between that and the aforementioned ideals would be.
I feel like it's a transition in general from the Gene Roddenberry era to the Rick Berman, who's a producer from here on until the Abrams films era. There's a great documentary called Chaos on the Bridge that was done by William Shatner. It's a little cheesy, but it's interesting. It's about the formation of the Next Generation series. And basically, Gene Roddenberry was like, no conflicts. I don't want any conflicts between any of the crew. Like, we're in the future. It's utopia. Fights, it's only plot focused. And a lot of people hate those first two seasons, including myself, because they are very dull. There's not like, there isn't a personal conflict. And died.
Conflicts between humans, because from that.
Exactly. It's more like, what's the plot? What's the monster? What's the thing we got to fix? You know, we all work together to fix it. But as after he died, it was like, okay, we can have people fight. Just because we are a unified front doesn't mean there are issues that we have to deal with constantly and different morals and ideologies that conflict with each other.
The show got better. Yeah. I mean, despite the fact that they live in this, quote, utopian society, or at least a significantly more morally advanced society than that in which we live today, they are still, for lack of a better word, human. I mean, obviously they're not all human. You have Klingons and Betazoids and so forth. But, you know, everyone will still have their own sort of morals and code of ethics, and those will differ from place to place, whether that's, you know, Vulcan and Earth, or even just different places on Earth, different age groups. People are still going to know and think and believe different things. So it's natural that some level of conflict would arise. The fact that it wasn't present in those first two seasons just really took away something from the show.
No, definitely, and I think that goes to the currency angle too. In that, what I like is that, you know, the reason they say that there is no more money is at replicators. Replicators basically create a piece because we could replicate anything we ever wanted.
Got it.
But I think what the show kind of shows is like, well, people still do want money and wealth. Yeah, and people, there are things you can't replicate, like land and property and certain things that you do need money for eventually.
Yeah,
I think this show got away from that. Like, there are still things.
Even if there isn't currency, there is still the desire, the need, or the want for some kind of bartering system.
Exactly, and to assign wealth to things, and to assign value to things, and there's always going to be that need to. It's a nice idea to go beyond that, but there's always going to be a need to say this object has value, therefore it needs to be protected over this object, or needs to be enforced legally and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with I think that's why they started doing the Latinum thing in this series. It's like, okay, we can have money again. You know, I feel like it's their way of being like, we can have money and trade and things like that again.
And it does make it a little bit more relatable to the audience, because obviously we still operate in currency. So it's, you know, something else, you know, that makes sense to us to have in the show.
Right, exactly. To have a thing that you have to do. And I like the idea of a non-replicable thing. It's like, well, okay, there are limits. You know, it's not a perfect system 100%. There are a few things that just cannot be replicated that are still rare and commoditized, but they're different. They're not gold, like we said. They're
I'm glad they put some thought into that of, you know, well, in this future society that has replicators, what could we use as currency? What would be valuable? And that's nice to know. I'm glad you looked that up.
That's my Wikipedia thing. I was realizing my obsession is Wikipedia. I love the conciseness of Wikipedia info dumping into my brain. Like, it's just like, it's very, I appreciate that people out there are doing all this work for me. Like, I went on a thing, we'll talk about the next episode, where I was like, what does baseball and Star Trek mean? And I had to read all about it, and I went down a rabbit hole, and it's just too easy.
I mean,
I also spoil myself, that's the problem.
It's like YouTube. When you start clicking on next video or on Wikipedia, this is hyperlinked. Let's go through. You're eventually gonna look up and be like, it's been 2 hours. What am I doing?
But I've learned a lot.
Like, yeah, I've absorbed so much knowledge.
Exactly. It's like this one has like a Cardassian occupation of Bajor. I'm like, oh no, I gotta read that. I'm going to read that one.
That sounds particularly interesting.
But then, you know, I'm going to read, like, a spoiler, like, you know, Bajor was recaptured. No! You know, like, that's not one I've read. Don't worry, it's not an actual spoiler. I just made something up. But, like, you know, that's my problem, is eventually I read something too far. I'm like, damn it, I never learned.
big shout-out and a thank you to all the Wikipedia editors out there, that's Wikipedia proper or Memory Alpha or Bulbapedia or whatever. We appreciate you. We use those websites.
Yeah,
keep up the good work.
You do such a great service to any fandom that exists. Thank you dearly from us and like the rest of the fans that exist. Thank you so much.
And yeah, because the percentage of people who contribute to the percentage of people who read is like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You look at some of these times, and maybe not with Star Trek, but with tons of people, but like certain ones, you see like, there's like, you look at the names, like that person does 90% of the work on the site, and you're like, damn, that person doesn't get paid. Yeah, and you're our heroes, so thank you very much, Wikipedia.
They're doing it only because they love a certain thing just that much more than we do.
It's true. Well, we got a little off the rails, but in a good way. Is there much else to say about this episode?
Well, yeah, I'd like to come back to the Kira storyline for just a second. I guess talking about, sort of tying in with the money thing, or just the development of the Federation in general. I was a little bit surprised, or maybe this was just a Bajoran thing, I don't know, but I was a little bit surprised that they were being so forceful with evacuating these people, even when, like, Kira and the guy in charge discuss this, and she's like, well, there's a better, safer way to extract these minerals, or why don't we just do that, because we won't have to displace the guy. And, you know, the other gentleman she was speaking to just straight up said, that would take too long. It's like, well,
right. Interesting.
Why? Wow. When did the Federation become, dare I say it, like an oil conglomerate that would just, you know, it's like, well, this is the quickest, fastest way to get the most out of what we want. Yeah, it's going to destroy the moon and we have to get everyone out of there, but we're going to get the stuff that we need. And I appreciate that it's going to benefit a lot of Bajorans. That's great. Hooray. But, I mean, displacement of people is a bad thing. Why? Right. I don't know.
I mean, well, it's the idea of progress, too. I mean, it's this is why the title is very smart in that way.
Yes.
It's, a lot of times in a bombed out, terrible, depressed city, you kind of have to ruin everything to kind of get progress back up. And I, this is not the same thing, but there was an interesting article, a podcast I was listening to about Rwanda. And basically, after the Rwanda genocide, so many men had died or arrested or were kicked out of the country that there were so many women in charge. And it's now like one of the most matriarchal societies in terms of like women in power.
Badass.
It's a sort of weird thing where like this huge balance came from a terrible, terrible thing. Like, you know that Rwanda would rather just not have had that happen, but the results are very fascinating. And I think that's sort of a similar thing here. It's like it's a horrible thing that happened on Bajor, but it's also a chance for Bajor to become a better society than maybe was before from the rubble, but because of that you have to go through like ruining people's lives in another part of the world, or another moon, rather. And so I do think you're right, Sarah, that conflict is very interesting, where it's like, yeah, we could take our time, but we need to rebuild now. You know, mm-hmm. we gotta start now. Like, we can't wait anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very tricky subject for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's also tricky that despite the fact that Mullabok said, you know, I'm willing to die here. Like, just go. I know the consequences. I don't care. I'd rather die here than live an extra 20 years on Bajor. But she took him anyway. It's like his life was more important than what he wanted. And that just becomes right. an ethical question in and of itself. And, you know, did she do the right thing? And yes, she did, but who was it right for? And I don't know. It was sort of murky, which is a good thing about Star Trek. It does that well.
No, that's a great question. I thought of hurricanes. You know, like when people say, I will never leave my home. I don't care if I die in the house. What do you do mm-hmm. at that point? You know? And it does get to an interesting, tough thing. You know, it's like ultimately she can't be responsible for this man's death, you know, but mm-hmm. she has to basically kill what he is. Like, it's very, you said, murky in that way. Complex Star Trek issues.
Yes. That's why we yeah. watch this show.
Exactly.
Very much. And as well as jokes about self-sealing stem bolts. It's like a mouth, it's a... Maybe a new Sally sells seashells.
Yes.
She sells seashells by the seashore. Tongue twister.
Self-sealing stem bolts. That's like a actor exercise to get
yes.
get your words in order.
Yes, actually.
Proper cup of coffee pot.
we should say self-sealing stem bolts or something like that before we start recording these.
Self-sealing stem bolts.
Maybe that'll stop my stuttering.
Oh, I was
oh,
going to say,
is
it was
this?
Pretty interesting that she built the kiln and then destroyed it.
Oh,
I thought that was
yeah.
a really
yeah.
powerful image. That was a really
another
shocking
of,
kind
another
of moment.
Piece of symbolism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. It's like she like, okay, you have no more excuse, and then I destroy it. It's like, woo, like that's intense. Like to have someone build, it's like building your house and then blowing it up. It's like, whoa, it's dark.
Mm-hmm. This really doesn't have anything to do with either of the plots, but I feel like we should talk about the fact that Morn asked Dax out on a date. we unfortunately didn't get to see this actually happen, but at the
yes,
beginning in the runabout we have Kira and Dax talking about it, and she said no, but she does make the comment of, you know, the 7 or 8 hairs on Morn's forehead make him kind of cute, and you're just like, that's sweet, but okay, Dax.
I like that Dax thinks beyond humanoid attractiveness.
I agree.
She sees into all kinds of different ways to find someone attractive. Morn might be the hottest guy in his race. We don't know.
Could be.
We don't know how they view. He's just the only one there, you know, so we don't know. He might be the George Clooney of his species.
Oh, goodness.
But
he?
I enjoyed that.
He's a Lurian. Okay, I'm falling into the Wikipedia black hole.
No!
Don't go too deep, Sarah. Save yourself.
Then you'd be like, Morn led the attack. No! What? He's way more important than I ever thought. All right, so shall we move on to the next episode?
Yes, yeah, let's go ahead.
All right, so the next episode, a little bit lighter, was If Wishes Were Horses. Sort of, I felt like a somewhat spiritual, turns out not to be, but it felt like some of the classic holodecks gone awry episodes of the TNG era. So in this episode, we see that everyone is experiencing the things that they want. Jake likes to go to a holo suite to play baseball with an old baseball player from the last season of baseball, as we learn. Julian is still trying his best to get with Jedzia the best he can. It's just not working. And Chief O'Brien is reading the story of Rumpelstiltskin to his daughter when suddenly Rumpelstiltskin appears, as does a very horned up Jedzia who wants to jump Julian right away. And a baseball player made incarnate. And we get to interact with these people for a while, see what they are. Eventually we learn that these are actually a race of creatures, shape-shifting creatures, I guess. Or perhaps more mind-bending creatures. It's not really made clear, but they're basically creatures who wanted to learn about the inhabitants of the Deep Space Nine by making their wildest dreams come true and seeing what they do with that. So yes, what do we think of this episode?
It was interesting, I'll say that. It was a curious episode.
It was kind
it
of
had
fun.
Good character moments. I think that's the plot is pretty whatever, but it had good character little moments, which I appreciated.
I appreciated the emus running around.
Yeah.
Odo trying to squirrel around emus is very funny. Odo just couldn't. When he went in and was like, nobody imagine anything. It's just like classic Odo.
And then he has the beautiful moment of imagining Quark in the brig.
He
was like, yes.
He's like,
that's what I mean. Yeah, there was this nice little like, character moments is what made this episode fun. Like when
he's
Quark
like,
has his
like,
beautiful
I have
ladies.
I have an imagination.
And then all of a sudden, Odo's like, "Sorry, what did you say?"
I was like, "That was Odo. That was Odo's moment to basically be like, I have an imagination. I just choose to not use it because it makes no sense to me."
Odo's very logical, but he still would love to see Quark in the brig once and for all.
Oh yeah.
And I like the little moment where Quark had his little ladies with him, and then he's all happy, and then Odo goes, you know all your customers are getting what they want, as in winning every time. And he's like, no! I enjoyed those moments. And it's like nice little things, like you learn that classic nerd fashion, baseball's extinct. It's like,
right?
People got tired of baseball? Okay. But I thought it was still kind of neat. It was kind of a cool idea that they like... a guy who was the best baseball player ever, who was Japanese. I thought it was a cool little twist. That was neat. The best baseball player ever, but no one cares because baseball was going out of fashion. It was the last ever baseball World Series. So I was like, well, that's kind of interesting idea of like being the best at something when it wasn't popular at all and like no one really appreciated you till later. So that was kind of neat, but that was the whole thing. It was like these character moments, but it was all kind of jumbled.
Yeah.
I will say that the actress who plays Jazia Zax is, when she wants to be sexual, she's very attractive.
Oh,
I
man.
Was so
bad
surprised
oh,
by
man.
That switch. Like, when it happened, I was like, dude, what's going on?
She looked like she was having a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. And I love the cattiness between real Dax and fake Dax.
Oh, that's great.
Imaginary Dax is like, well, maybe you shouldn't be such a cold fish. She's like, excuse me.
It's like, I'm sorry. Do you want to repeat?
She's like, I don't think that. I don't think that. It was a classic sort of, I don't want to be like, okay, I'll be a little bit sexist. It's a classic sort of, like, I feel more female-centric move where it was like, where she had the great, like, oh, no, it's fine. Everyone has their fantasies. It's fine. So you want me to be like submissive?
Yeah, how she asked it was like, damn, Dax going for the kill. Like,
maybe
she's like, no.
Maybe this is bad of me, but I really like to see Julian uncomfortable.
He does
it so well.
I think you, Sarah, compared him to Gaius Baltar, and they both do totally have that squirmy, uncomfortable in their own skin thing to do so well. Maybe it's a British thing. when you're stuck and just don't want to be there at any point.
It's like, can I leave now?
I quite enjoy that. I'm glad they brought back the baseball thing with Sisko. I forgot his name. I quite enjoyed his whole interaction with the baseball player and their whole storyline. I found pretty charming.
Yeah.
Nothing too exciting. Also, Rumpelstiltskin, played by, I'll get his name right, Michael J. Anderson from one of my favorite shows of all time, Carnival. He's a freaking great actor who's been in tons of stuff. A lot of David Lynch stuff. Twin Peaks and Mulholland Drive. He's an awesome actor. So that just made me happy to see him. So yeah, it was an interesting episode. I also like that the way to defeat the giant space explosion was that he had to convince everyone not to believe in it. That everything was feeding into it, and he had to basically say, there is no thing, and we never saw that. It's that sort of weird logic that the Nightmare on Elm Street movies always occupy and rely on.
Yeah, it was kind of the flip side. It reminded me of the storyteller. In that episode, the fear of the villagers was creating the monster that would appear for 5 nights. So in this episode it was Dax's imagination that created the danger to the space station, but we got Sisko basically saying what I wish could have been said to the villagers. It's like, guys, everything's all right. It's not there. Don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
It was an interesting comparison for me. I was like, oh, that's what this is like. Only instead, you know, everything's gonna just stop. Like stop. It was like, oh, never mind. We're cool.
Right. I feel like Sisko lets too many things go. He seems very angry at first on things, and then it's just like someone explains, and he's like, all right, fine. He's gotta get more mad at these creatures who keep messing with him all day. This poor guy gets put into games, and he gets like
and then gets
his
mad at the
station
wrong
overrun
person.
With weird, like imaginary creatures. Like, he's gotta get a handle on this stuff.
It's like, dude, come on, your anger is misplaced.
You gotta get more mad, man. I don't know what to say. I guess there's not much to say on this episode, huh? You're kind of quiet on this one over
yeah,
the other one.
It was an interesting and fun, like little, I guess. I guess we can consider it like more of a filler episode.
Yeah, it felt that way. It felt like just a bit of a, like I said, reminding me of the TNG holodeck gone awry episodes, like the one where Moriarty escapes from the holodeck and causes shenanigans and stuff like that, you know, like it reminded me a little bit of that, where it's like, a bunch of interesting, kind of fun character moments, but nothing all that substantial or interesting to talk about.
Another great, again, with the character moments, another great exchange between Odo and Quark. The very beginning, Quark is like, well, you know, I could program a little shapeshifter playmate for you in the Hall of the Sweets. And Odo says, you're disgusting, and, you know, walks away. And Quark just kind of grins and goes, till the day I die.
He's like, yes, I know. I'm happy about it.
He had some really graphic way of describing it, with, like, you can meld together or squish together. So I was like, oh.
Please stop, Quark. No.
Quark never gets tired of messing with poor Odo.
I think he thrives off of it.
I honestly think they thrive off of annoying
each other, which is why Quark isn't actually in jail at this point because Odo's like, you know what, your bar actually serves a purpose, and Quark is like, you keep me on my toes.
Totally. Yeah, I think they have a love-hate relationship with each other. Mostly hate. Just a smidge of love. Just a little tiny saffron-ish sprinkling, but it matters. It's still there. And we know the slash fiction exists. We've discovered it.
Yes.
That was the
I've not
best.
Read it, but it is there.
I'm sorry,
It
Sarah.
is
That was the
there.
best little bit of confirmation ever. Like, yes, let's not discuss this. Move on. That was
I just like to think also when O'Brien saw Rumpelstiltskin, he's like, of course this happens. I can't.
It's like,
it
and
should be
to
a
me.
normal day.
It's like, and to me, of all people.
By the way, there's a great comic book called like O'Brien on the Bridge or something, and it's basically just about like how sad O'Brien's life is on TNG, where he just sits in the transporter room all day and never gets to
Aww.
Do anything. It's so adorable and sad. I love it. I highly recommend it.
I would have liked to read it.
So yeah, I think there's not much else to say on this one. Is there much else to say?
I don't think so. I
No,
think we
I'm
covered
good.
just about everything.
Yeah, it's pretty all right episode. So, next up, we will have The Forsaken, which will see the return, well, I guess the premiere of Deep Space Nine premiere of Lexana Troi, who's always great.
Hooray!
So
I'm very
happy.
excited.
So happy.
And then Dramatis Personae. So, those will be our two episodes we'll talk about next week. So, in the meantime, I want to thank Peter and Sarah, as always. Our theme song is by Captain Meatshield. You can check them out on Twitter at CPTN_MeatShield. We are a part of the Tuscan Shed Media Network. You can see more of our shows at tuscanshed.com. If you like the show, like, subscribe, rate, and review it any way that you can. It does help us find new listeners. And until next time, this is the crew of Geek Space Nine signing off.
Bye, guys.
Thanks for listening.